All right, everybody, welcome to the Hunter's Quest podcast. This is your host, Hunter McWaters, and today I'm joined by Mr. Ryan Eford of Canis Athlete. How you doing, sir?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. Thanks for coming on. How you doing today? We were just catching up a little bit about some of your summer plans, but yeah, what's been going on with you?
Man, just getting ready. We've got an Africa trip coming up in August, so we're going to go over and hunt Plains game down in the Eastern Cape, and then about 7 days later, we'll head up to Zululand with Gary Kelly Safaris and hunt Cape Buffalo with the double rifle. It's something I've always wanted to do, iron sights. So nice. I picked up a 470 Nitro Express at the show this year, and so really looking forward to that. We just got back from a bear hunt up in Alaska and got a bear.
Kurt was telling me about that.
Yeah, it was cold. It was about 15 degrees cold this year than normal, and you're sitting there eating that Pacific wind in your face, you know, sitting there for 14 hours a day. And I've never done a coastal hunt like that, just sitting there. And so didn't really know what to expect. And so I learned a lot, you know, got to see a lot of bears, and it was, in fact, we saw every animal. The only animal we didn't see was a wolf, and, we saw wolverines and caribou, moose.
Oh, wow. Wolverines are super rare, man. Like, the guy, when I got on my last trip, he's like, if you see a wolverine, shoot it. Like, you'll never see one again.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I got lucky I was up in Nunavut in the Arctic Circle years ago on a caribou hunt and shot a wolverine. And then, actually, that was the first animal that we saw on my Alberta bighorn hunt last year. So I've been fortunate to...
You've been on some cool hunts, man. You've been all over the place. Tell me, I want to hear a little bit more about Africa, because I haven't done Africa yet. Actually, I just did I hunted Mexico a year or so ago, but I just did my first real international hunt to Spain. And it's definitely a different experience, but what countries are you hitting? And then tell me a little bit about your rifle, because that sounded cool.
Yeah, so this trip we're going to hunt South Africa. I've hunted Africa twice now, Zimbabwe, for Plains game and buffalo, and then I've hunted Zambia for leopard, buff, and Plains game. And
cool.
I'll kind of tell you, my dream as a kid, you know, of course, growing up in the South, hunting whitetail and waterfowl and rabbits, squirrels. My dream was to go to Africa. And years ago, my son was actually six. He had his seventh birthday in camp, and had the opportunity to take him and my dad along. And it was just amazing. It was everything I thought it would be and more. We landed in the bush plane, and there was lion tracks, you know, on the runway.
Nice.
And just the amount of game you see, right? I mean, sheep hunts are tough, or mountain hunts are tough. I mean, I've been on some elk hunts that, in fact, that's what made me want to go sheep hunting. You know, it's like, what's next? And some of those elk hunts I've been on were horseback or backpack or combo horseback backpack and in Colorado up in the high country, and they were tough. But you know, you're targeting that one animal, and a lot of the sheep hunts that I've been on, I mean, you'll go days without seeing an animal, and we'll get into that later. You know, the mental toughness part of sheep hunting. Or mountain hunting, but
not to mention you're thinking about eating a tag that costs like thousands of dollars.
Exactly. but Africa, in the sense, it's so different in the sense that you see so many animals, but there's also all these animals that can potentially kill you, right? I mean, from snakes to hippos to elephants to buffalo and lions. And so, you know, reading books about, the guys back in the old day, Hemingway going over there. So it's different. And in fact, you know, we've been doing, which I know we'll get into as well, we've been sheep hunting for like the lion's share of our hunts have been sheep hunting around the world, testing gear and proving the gear, right?
Making sure, testing ground.
Yeah. And so as we've been setting on cold mountainsides, or you know, riding horses for 3 days, or having horse wrecks, you know, Kurt, my cameraman, you know, we've talked about how much we miss Africa, and so this year we're going to go back and do it again.
Nice.
And I've always heard, you know, if you go to Africa, like They say, be careful because you're going to dream about going back every day for the rest of your life.
It seems like even though I know there's a lot of dangerous stuff there too, and it can be really tough, it seems like actually a pretty good place to take young, you know, kids. Like my friend Pedro, his son's first hunt was over there. Yep. Was that your experience?
Yeah. You know, those guys are, I mean, the system or the protocol to become a professional hunter. I mean, I've done it twice, but I've met a lot of these guys at the show, and I mean, they're true professionals. And like when I took my son, I mean, he walked 7 miles his first day tracking buffalo. Nice. And that was a lot. You know, we were baiting him with candy by the end of it. But the thing was, the PH had a rifle. I had a rifle. And then the tracker, one of the trackers had a backup rifle. And, you know, the plan was just keep him either behind the guns or in between the guns. And we stay together. And,
yeah
it's obviously things can happen anywhere, right? They can happen driving down the road.
Of course, yeah.
I mean, that memory, I'll never forget when he came back. So, again, he had his 7th birthday in camp. And on the plane on the way home, he said, Dad, you know, I just realized I haven't watched TV. I haven't been on my phone. And he's whittling sticks, right? Just doing the things that you wish all kids did more today and get off the technology. And I think it was life-changing for him. At least it's – you know, gave him a foundation of being a kid. And so, and I mean, imagine a young man like sitting around the campfire at night whittling his stick and you're listening to lions roar.
Dude, yeah. That's getting my juices going because I was thinking about my son is getting to the age where he's, I've taken him on some like dove hunts and some goose hunts and stuff. He's just getting to the age where he's starting to get really interested in animals and hunting. And he's all about like reptiles and stuff and he's really attracted to geese for some reason right now. So I'm trying to cultivate that, but man, I think he would just go crazy if we went to Africa. That sounds super cool.
Yeah, he'd love it. And you know, I think there's a balance again, growing up whitetail hunting, whitetail. I mean, you look at guys, most of us as hunters, right? Even, you know, Jim Shockey, I've watched his show since I was a kid and I've heard him say if there was one hunt he could go on for the rest of his life, you know, he cut his teeth hunting whitetail and that's what it would be. And so as I took my kids out whitetail hunting, you know, I try to, because obviously it can be boring at times, right? Mm-hmm. And they're spooky and you got to be quiet. And so that's what's cool about Africa too. I mean, you're seeing animals everywhere. I mean, it's the largest game field in the world.
Yeah. I was thinking about doing like for a first hunt, like a Texas whitetail hunt or something, but then Africa would be so much cooler.
That'd be amazing. I don't think you'd be disappointed.
No. Is it pretty conducive to bringing your rifles over there?
It's not too bad. You know, most of the outfitters or booking agents, like Neil and Brownlee, like they'll do the paperwork. You know, they'll make sure that you're all buttoned up.
Nice.
You know, I think it's getting better. I was traveling through the Johannesburg airport one time on the way to Zimbabwe with my son beside me, and the customs officer came out and said, do you want to see these guns in Zimbabwe? And I mean, Johannesburg, that's a nice airport, right? And it really caught me off guard, and I said, yeah, of course I do, they're my guns. And they asked for some cash and handed over some cash
that's the way it works in a lot of the world, man.
Yeah. Of course, the gun showed up, and I was talking to the PHs in camp, and it's like, yeah, we're trying to, you know, we wish that wasn't the case. But I said, well, the issue is, you know, you guys are carrying rifles with expensive optics on them, and the rifle itself, right, is mm-hmm. not cheap. And so, you know, for a $20 bill or a $100 bill, whatever it is, like, you want to make sure your stuff gets there. But it's not, like, I just did my paperwork. And we'll have a guy meet us when we land on the ground in Africa, and so it should be fine.
Cool. Okay, well, just for a little context for listeners, I linked up with Kurt at the Western Hunt Expo last year and got my hand. I'd seen you guys there before, but then I last year spent some time looking at the stuff, and I was like, wow, there's something to this, and talked to some other guys that had use some of your stuff. I think some of the dudes from EXO had tried some of your stuff, And so started talking to Kurt and tried out some stuff. And, you know, I'm proud, I've already announced it, but I'm proud to be working with you guys. And this is, I mean, people can take this for what it's worth, but like, I am being 100% genuine here. I've tried almost every other brand out there. When I got that box with all my first stuff that I was going to be testing out, I could just tell it was a kind of that next level of quality of the design features, the aesthetic, and just the quality, compared to everything else I've tried. It was as good or better than anything else I've tried. So I was very pleased. And, so I want to talk to you a little bit because, you know, I feel like we share a little bit of the same entrepreneurial spirit. We're both also, like we alluded to earlier, guys from the Southeast, you know, that have answered the call to go hit the mountains and, you know, traveled across the world to hunt and stuff like that. So, so kudos to you for building, a really quality brand, and I'm excited to be working with you guys. And, but let's back up, and I want to hear about you, your background, and what led you to the place where you started Canis, because, just like some people might say to me, I had a lot of people say to me, there's so many people out there like making TV shows and film, like why, like, and even myself, it's like, why am I doing this? Like, how am I going to differentiate myself? Clothing is the same way. You're going up to bat against some big boys. And, like I can't imagine jumping into the clothing, space. So, so yeah, walk me through that, man. And let me just hear a little bit about your story and how you got there.
Absolutely. So I'm, of course, from Arkansas. I joined the military just out of high school in the Air National Guard and spent 6 years in the military going through college. My plan was to stay in the military in some capacity, but I needed to get my degree to be an officer. And so just out of college, was looking for a job, figuring out for my unit what I wanted to do. Was I going to go try to fly, or was I going to go do something else? And met some guys, and we ended up starting a commodity company. There was one guy that had some capital, and the American dream. There was a CEO here in town in Fayetteville, Arkansas, that we asked him if we could have free office space, and said, hey, if we ever make a dollar, you know, we'll pay you for the time that we've been here. And we sat in the back of this office space, in the back of his office, and tried to stay out of the way, but we had laptops and phones, and we started cold calling and selling sugar and rice and beans and import export logistics.
Dude,
and
I gotta interrupt you really quick, because that's hilarious, because my first thing I did at college was importing olive oil, sun-dried tomatoes, and apricots.
I'll be damned. That's amazing. Yeah, that's very similar.
Yeah,
and I mean, like,
that's hilarious.
I know that you're like, what am I doing here? Like, how in the world? And I get asked all the time, like, how in the world did you get into commodities? You know, and
yeah.
I think people think that, you know, it's like you went to school and you said, I'm going to be a commodity trader. And it's just, I mean, it just shows you that really with hard work and I'd say a lot of perseverance,
yeah.
You know, and the thing that people miss is, you know, we'd come into the office at 6:30 in the morning, right? Cause we didn't have anything. We had to create something. And so we'd come in at 6 o'clock, 6:30 in the morning, and we would start calling, or, you know, we'd prep for the day and we'd start calling the East Coast because they're an hour in front of us. And then we'd stay until 7 o'clock and we'd be cold calling the West Coast and just trying to maximize that day.
Nice.
And so the company took off, right? Didn't, you know, you're young and you're not really thinking too far ahead. And the company took off. And I remember I'd tell my business partner about 2 years in, I was like, now, you know, I got to go back to 2 years of military training. And he kind of looked at me like, are you crazy? Like, you know, this, we've been doing this for 2 years. We've got a business. And I had my third kid, which was twins. And I remember,
oh, no way.
I remember having the conversation, maybe we should tone down the commando stuff, right? The company's taken off and you got four kids now. And so long story short, the business, the commodity business afforded me the opportunity to have some extra money and pursue my passion for hunting, right? And so, and when I say pursue that passion, it was basically, you know, booking a public land elk hunt, right? It wasn't overly expensive, but it was, to me, relative to what I had was able to do in the past versus mm-hmm. just hunting public ground for waterfowl and whitetail and hunting pheasants out west in the panhandle of Texas where my dad grew up. So kind of segue into, and how did that segue into to Canis? A lot of people don't know this, but we booked a public land elk hunt and we were all wearing Sitka. My dad, my brother, one of my business partners at the time. And I got a call from the outfitter and he said, hey, there's an agency that wants to know if they can film you guys on this hunt. And I was like, huh? You know, so confused. We were all shooting Matthews because, you know, that's just what we shot here.
Yeah.
My friends always shot Matthews. And so Danner Boots had kicked in some money and they wanted to do a film about people who worked for a living and went on a hunt. And so how they trained for that hunt, how they had that work-life balance, right, to go high up in the mountains on horses and try to get an elk. So we did the film. And my phone rang in my commodity company, and it was Brad Christian, who's now at Sitka.
Oh, yeah.
He was in charge of marketing at Matthews at the time. And he was like, I want to thank you. We're going to jump on as a sponsor because you guys all shot our bows, and you wore Sitka. Are you sponsored by Sitka? And I was like, no, man. Like, we're just – we bought it. And so he was like, well, have you heard of Kuyu? And I was like, no, I hadn't. And I guess at the time – Kuyu had only been in business about maybe a year, 2 years. And so being an entrepreneur, and I just said, I don't know where this will go, but I booked a ticket out to Dixon or out to Sac, and I flew out to meet with Jason, and Patrick was there. Todd Harney. Todd Harney's not there anymore, but I remember Todd was like, he was the kid in the office. You know, he was carrying boxes, and Sean was there. And so that was really cool. You know, I just, I switched over my gear to Kuyu just out of loyalty. It was like, seemed like nice guys and didn't want to pass up the opportunity to meet the founder of a hunting company. You know, to me, it's like every kid's dream. So I went and, you know, stood in their booth at shows for a while. And, I talked to Jason and, hey, can we partner up? Or, and he's like, no, you know, I had a partner before and I'm just going to do this. And so, I just wore Kuyu, and I've been an avid skier, my whole life. And I would say on the other end of that spectrum, when I was young, wearing, you know, military BDUs, cause my dad's like, you know, I'm not getting you anything really expensive because you grow out of it. And so used to freeze in the whitetail woods.
Oh yeah.
So I came to appreciate, like all of us hunters, I think we're gearheads, whether you're a skier or a mountain biker or a hunter. And so I would say I knew what worked and what didn't work and just was very intrigued by that. And so when I saw that Kuyu and Jason made the decision to sell some of the company to private equity, at that time I had a great management team in place at my commodity company. And I thought, you know, that's intriguing. Like if I didn't know if, you know, he was going to eventually completely exit or get out. I thought, I know import export. I know how to go to destination, whether that's a sugar mill in South America, right? Or it's a cannery in Asia. We know how to do that. We know how to work. And so I literally just started looking up whether it was Arc'teryx or Marmot or Patagonia or Kuyu or Sitka. Like, where's this stuff being made, right? Just started educating myself. And I started finding those factories around the world. Like, what are the number one technical factories in the world? And I'll never forget.
Seems like Vietnam is pretty legit for clothing.
Yeah. So I'll tell you, which surprised me, right? Because I mean, I was literally starting this journey cold. It was China at the time. They were very smart. The most technical factories in the world at that time would now be, when we started this journey, probably 6-7 years ago, when it was just an idea, it was China. And then when Trump came in, the 301 tariffs hit, that I think a lot of that equipment, a lot of that expertise moved to Vietnam.
Yeah.
But when you have, I give the example of watches, right? Like Rolexes are made in Switzerland, right? Mm-hmm. really nice cars are made in Germany. I mean, when you have an area and a demographic that that's been their focus their whole life, you know, there's certain things in the world that that certain countries become the best at.
Yeah.
And so, but I got there, there was an Austrian CEO living in Hong Kong, and he told me no twice over email. And I said, well, you know, why? And didn't tell him what the idea was, but he said, well, I'm at capacity for the next 15, 20 years. Hmm. I said, well, if you're at capacity for the next 20 years, then you don't have any, you don't care about your competitors because you don't have any, right? I mean, you, so can you give me names, 2, 3, 4 of people that I could call? And I, and again, just like, I think because I was so persistent, he said, what's your idea? And I said, well, technical hunting apparel. And I guess he was a hunter. And
So
he said, I'll give you a phone call. And I'll never forget, it was 5 o'clock in the morning, central time here in the US. So I set my alarm for 3:45 in the morning, got up, took a shower, tried to start my day, had coffee, you know, pretended like it was, it was 6 a.m. or 7 a.m. And so on that call, he said, do you know how, do you know what you're doing? I said, no, man, I know what works and what doesn't work. But I don't know how to go get zippers and trims and the, what fabric should we use? And so he gave me the name of Marcel Gesser, who is now my business partner. And he said, there's a guy that you need to call. And basically, I want to help you because you've been so persistent. Mm-hmm. Call Marcel, book a flight to Switzerland. He's got a lab where he designs gear for the biggest brands in the mountaineering and the ski space, and see where it goes. And so I booked a flight to Switzerland, and we had a conversation. And I thought it was cool, too, because Marcel is not a hunter, right? So obviously we get certain pieces through this team of designers that maybe they don't work for the hunting application. They're too noisy, right? They're whatever it is. But I asked Marcel, I said, before we go down this journey of time and money and energy, can we be better? Because if we can't be better, like, there's no reason to be a Me Too brand, right? There's, like, as you mentioned earlier in the podcast, there's plenty of people out there doing it or trying to do it.
Yeah.
And he said, we can do it better. And that's why when you look, you know, guys who are listening, who wear our gear, you wear our gear now, it's tough, but it's also light. And it's also warm. And so guys are really blown away when they wear it, and they things that typically they walk through a thicket of hook thorns, and their down jacket or their synthetic insulation jacket doesn't rip. You know, you might hear the thorns breaking off, but you don't have a rip. And so we really focus, like, in the initial line of we use Cordura fabrics, and so they're tough. Nylon face fabrics, which when we came out, most of the companies in the space were still using primarily polyester fabrics. And so that's why you're getting the rips and the tears. And so, and it's not easy, you know, it's, there's certain things that are more expensive. And right now we still held our direct consumer, price point. You know, you'll find us in a few retailers around the country, your boutique bow shops, gun shops, but, we still maintain our direct consumer pricing.
So I had been wearing Kuyu for a long time, which their stuff is great. So I feel like, to be honest, a lot of people use them kind of as like the bent, like, oh, it's as good as Kuyu. So I hate to say that, but like every other clothing company I tried, I kind of based it off them because that's what I wore and that's what I found was best. And then but everything I tried was like, okay, this is just a step below, you know? And
yeah,
y'all's stuff was the first time I was like, okay, this is just as good. And there's a lot of things I like about that are better. So, and that's pretty cool. And I think, you know, it's really cool how similar in my career, but just different how your previous career had kind of almost like God had prepared you through, I don't know if you believe in God or not, but had prepared you through your previous career to have the know-how to, like I said, go out to those suppliers and to go check them out. And then like just that attitude of, there's this guy in Austria, let me book a flight and just go over there and see him. And I really like that. And that's kind of something that I, that I kind of, I don't know. I feel like we're a little bit kindred spirits on some of those things there.
Well, absolutely. You know, we were editing our Alberta Bighorn film yesterday, and I was laughing because in that film, you know, you film these hunts, right? And then you edit them later. And so you get a chuckle out of some of the things.
That you learn a lot too. Like, you're like, why did I leave that spot? What an idiot.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I made the comment of, I knew we were going to be in one. And, you know, I think the parallel, I'll say this, sheep hunting has taught me so much about business, the lessons that you can learn, or Western hunting, right? Like some of these hunts, I mean, they're tough, and you got to be mentally tough. And it's the same thing being an entrepreneur. I mean, you know, there's days you wake up and you're like, you take a deep breath. You're like, what are we doing? Right. It's just that. Yeah. And if you get sucked into that, you can't let the fear of taking a risk, you know, paralyze you, or then you don't move forward. And, you know, I remember when I went to the military, I mean, I grew up, my dad was a coach and a high school principal and ran a, it was my high school principal and ran a strict household, but I also grew up in a football town, right? And I played football, an incredible program, one of the winningest programs, if not the winningest in the state now.
Defensive back.
Defensive back, yeah.
Am I right?
Cornerback, yeah.
Absolutely. Dude, I can guess people's football positions. It's like a hidden talent.
But, you know, the lessons, when I went to the military, I'd say, you know, basic training, it was easy for me, right? Like, I was excited to be getting on a plane. And I remember I was on the same flight with other guys who were terrified to go. And I'm like, man, how bad can it be? You know, I just played football in this program from the seventh grade, and our coaches, they were tough and could be, you know, what I would have said then, nasty at times. But as you, every year you get older in life, you look back and you realize those lessons that you learned and that mental toughness. So I went to the military, it was easy. And then, but it taught me hard work. I mean, there's a lot of times early on in my business career that I look back, I remember, you know, being out there cornerback, not wanting to come out of the game, and had a stinger in my shoulder. And I was like, I can't even feel my arm right now, but I don't want to go out of the game. So I'm not going to say anything to anybody.
Yeah.
And when business would get tough, I would think back on those moments. Right. And then you start mountain hunting and it's a grind. Right. And I think about all my sheep hunts, and I've been fortunate. And I think obviously sheep guides they're tough individuals. We talk about that in our films a lot, right? But you know when, and the camera guys that I've always had alongside me, four different guys, sometimes together, or, you know, some guys have a conflict and can't go, but all of my camera guys have been extremely tough individuals, mentally and physically. And you know when these big personalities get really quiet, right, for 2 or 3 days at a time and no one's talking, you realize how bad it sucks.
Oh yeah.
And so I think that's cool. That's cool about hunting and doing the mountains, that there is a massive parallel in business and
for
hard times.
Yeah. I'm remembering when you were saying that earlier about, for me, it was like trying to go to sleep, sometimes being like, I don't know if this is going to like work. I don't know if I'm going to make it. Like, I don't know if I'm going to make enough revenue to be able to pull this off. But for me, it was like having faith in what I felt like I was born to do and seeing the end before it was a reality. And like you said, just perseverance. And then also just knowing, like, and this is such a blessing, you know, to be in our country and kind of, you know, where we are, or where I am, I guess, is like, you know, if this does fail, I'm not going to be like literally starving to death in the gutter. You know, like, I will not die. Like, if it fails, it fails. At least I tried. You know, so that's huge.
And you come to the realization that you're going to bank on your personality, your work ethic, right? You know you can do really anything you set your mind to. And you're like, if for whatever reason I've chosen the wrong path in the sector, you know, I believe in Ryan, or I believe in Hunter, and we will go be successful.
Absolutely, man. And just not quitting and realizing, just like anything else, it's so funny because it's so much like a mountain hunt, like the entrepreneurial journey. Because yeah, there's those moments where you're like, this is awesome, this is sick, I love this, this is having so much fun. And then there's those moments where like, this is terrible, like I just have to just keep walking, keep going. And not every moment is fun and awesome, but it's like the whole kind of journey when you step back and look at it is what makes it what it is.
Absolutely. I was sitting on the side of a mountain 2 years ago in Alberta, and a guy named Logan Summers had gone with me. Kirk couldn't make that trip, and his horse had thrown his head back, and he had a little bit of a black eye, and we were in a horrible storm that rolled in, flattened our tents, had dumped snow when I got back to the tent. The trekking pole had snapped in the middle. My sleeping bag was full of snow and water about 3 inches, and just one of those deals, right? So we get the tent back up, we patch the hole, and we're laying there, and we're taking turns holding that center pole on that teepee. And I look over at him, and he's got this black eye. I mean, he also had a little blood on his cheek from a briar or a limb that had gotten him. And I mean, it's just blowing like 60 mile an hour, 100 mile an hour gust. And he looks over at me, and we both just smile at each other. And he said, "Are we the crazy ones? Like, we paid for this. Yeah. What the hell are we doing here?"
Right.
You know, you ask yourself that same question sometimes in the entrepreneurial journey. And we went back to Alberta because we ended up getting weathered out, and I knew it was going to be a tough hunt. And we went back this year, and that was my slam ram. You know, that we were in the Wilmore Wilderness, and that video, I think we're actually going to drop that next week.
Nice.
But there's a shot. I'm laying on the pass. Same deal. We're in a storm again, and I think it was day 8, and we hadn't seen a sheep. Much less a ram. And I just looked at the camera, and I can see that look on my face. But you've got to stay mentally focused, right? And you've got to be positive, because mm-hmm. if you can't be, you're going to have a miserable experience.
Yeah. Yeah, that's – and going back to the cameraman thing, like, you can teach camera skills. You know, you can train in the gym. The one thing that, like, guys that I work with like have to have, I can deal with needing work on the camera gear or even like physically, but like you have to have a good attitude or else it is not going to work.
Absolutely. That's exactly like, right. You know, people ask me, Kurt's a bigger guy. I mean, a lot of guys know, I'm a defensive back, right? I mean, that's my frame.
Yeah.
But I tell people, because guys and a lot of older guys will ask me like, man, how good is shape? I'm like, be in shape, be in the best shape you can be for a mountain hunt.
Yeah.
But you don't have to be the strongest or the fastest, but you got to be tough and you got to have a positive attitude, because, mm-hmm. you know, you can take your time, and yes, it may limit you getting an animal or not. It may limit you getting a smaller animal, or maybe not the one you want, right? Because you can't cover as much ground. But if you can be mentally tough and you can be in good shape and you can take your time and weather cooperates, you know, you can have a good chance of success.
And you'll enjoy it more if you're in shape.
That's exactly right.
You won't be like hating your life the entire time. It'll still suck, but it won't be like I'm about to die suck.
That's exactly right.
So yeah, talk to me, because for me, you know, with this venture that I've been on for the last 3-4 years, building a brand and trying to build an audience and all the stuff I'm working on, you do need like a level of obsession. Like, you just do. Like, I mean, because, you know, when most people are like, oh yeah, you know, I'm off work, laptop's closed till Monday, you know, turning off the email, you know, me, like, it's more like I have to drag myself away from my desk. It's like, oh yes, you have to spend time with your family. Like, or my wife kind of gets mad at me because I'm like sending emails or making a post or whatever. It's like, you have to have like a level of obsession. And then on top of that, you know, going on these adventures, for me, like if I start going like 6 weeks at home, I start to be like, oh, I'm getting the itch, you know, like the routine's starting to bug me. But you know, we got to be good husbands and good fathers. Like, that's the most important thing. So, and then there's the fitness aspect too. Like you gotta stay on top of your fitness. So what are some practical ways that, you know, and then for me too, I'm also trying to develop my spirituality, like, you know, stay connected to God and not fall off the deep end there. So, you know, there's like routines and systems I kind of have in place that I'm still not perfect, but I'm getting there. I'm learning how to kind of find that. How are some ways that you've kind of structured your life to, because it's a lot, starting and running a business, having a family, doing these crazy hunts, all the stuff we're doing. So how do you do it?
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, it's a battle, right? For lack of better terms. I mean, it's tough, and you try to always be present. You try to turn it on and turn it off, right? But, you know, I know there's times where my wife will say something and I call it the 1,000-yard stare, right? You're looking off into space. Yeah.
Takes you like 30 seconds to answer. Like,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Are you here? And so we've got a 1-year-old at home. So I just had
me too.
Fifth. Okay. So, I mean, you know, and, I'm 2 days ago, you know, it's like, I put everything aside.
So you got five now.
I got five. Yeah. So I've got one boy, 11 twins, boy and a girl, 14 girl and 16 boy.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You know, I would say, well, on the little one, you know, I just put everything down and just said, I'm just going to go lay on his floor and I'm going to chase him and let him chase me. And once you break that, you know, that business mentality and really your brain shuts it down. I had the most fun. In fact, my wife, she came in, I think it was 2 hours later, and she's like, what were you guys doing? And it's like, we've been running across the house back and forth, tackling each other. And you know, it's so healthy, right?
Yeah.
Because there is this balance. And I also, and I talked to Marcel about it, my business partner in Switzerland, like, if you never turn it off, I also think that you get tunnel vision, right? You start to lose the creative side of your brain because you get in that rut. And so it's good to go on vacation. It's good to basically turn it off. And 'cause when you come back, you look at it through a different lens. But, mm-hmm. you know, back to the kiddos. Again, I'm very, very lucky in the sense that right now, and I don't think Bodie, my youngest, is going to be any different. I've got four kids, two boys and two girls, my older ones. They all hunt. And nice. So I've got a hunting property that I got a couple of years ago in Oklahoma, and
oh, cool.
There's just nothing like it. You know, I'm sitting out there watching in the blind with my daughters and they love it, right? They're actually more focused, to be honest, which has been fascinating to me than the boys. And I don't know if that's competition. I don't know if it's just, you know, wanting to impress dad, but it's more than, I used to think it was that, but it's more than that. And so I think getting them, and I remember, man, when they were younger and we'd go out and we'd sit in the blind and I knew we had no chance of seeing a deer, right? I'd take a book with me and it's like, just let them have fun, bring snacks. And when they got bored, we'd get out. But I'm very blessed in that sense. And God has blessed me that my kid, you know, doing the hard work, I feel like early and introducing them to the outdoors, fishing and hunting, that they've got the bug. And they may not be as hardcore as me or maybe my girls. My girls don't really, they don't get into the fishing as much, right? Now, the boys, they'll take a side-by-side and load up the tackle box, and you won't see them for 8 hours. And,
nice.
And the girls will be swimming in the lake, right? And but when it's hunting season, you know, they're into it. And so, but yeah, it is a balance, and you have to, you know, and I know people that I've known or met in my career that they were very successful entrepreneurs and they had no relationship or have no relationship, right, to any important degree with their children. And because they built a successful company or an enterprise or a network of companies. Mm-hmm. And it's like, for me, it's like, you know, I bust my ass for my kids and my family, right? That's what it's about. Like, I want to be able to go take them to Africa, right? I want to be able to, someday my dream would be to walk up a mountain and carry their rifle or help them clean their sheep on top of a mountain. And as you know, everything's getting more and more expensive. And so that's why I do it. And so if you keep that focus that I do it for my family, then you've got that balance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, no matter how much you love it and how obsessed we are with it, like, you know, when you're in the hospital or you're on your deathbed or something, you know, your brand isn't going to be there holding your hand. Like, your employees probably aren't going to be there holding your hand. Like, it's going to be your kids, exactly, and your family, right. You know? So,
you mentioned something that's actually, it's funny to me too, because there's been days where you're tired, right? You're tired from being a dad. And I coach, I've been a travel baseball coach and football coach as well, you know, for my boys' teams. But there's days when you start to close the laptop and you've had a stressful day at the office, right? And you're tired. And the last thing you want to do is work out, but you're like, man, for my sanity, like, I'm going to be a better dad if I work out, but I got to work out because I got the sheep hunt coming up, right? Yeah. So I got to stay in shape. And so, yeah, it's real. But unfortunately for me, that I've convinced my brain that I'm a better person and a better business person and a better dad, like, when I do those hard things, right? And
yeah.
I think we can probably parlay that into, I know you had mentioned wanting to talk about, because I spend a lot of time thinking, I get asked all the time, I'm sure you do too, what's your favorite hunt, right? What's the most? And I'm like, you know, it's interesting because I was listening to Tom Brady talk the other day, and he talked about football is a hard game, right? And it teaches you so much. It's hard, and hard things in life, or David Goggins, you know, talks about it. And I listened to some of the Sean Ryan Show stuff and those guests that come on. Mm-hmm. And, man, it resonates because, like, until I did British Columbia for Stone Sheep and did Alberta for Bighorn, somebody said, what's your most memorable hunt? It was my doll sheep hunt. I mean, I shot my ram 20 miles from base camp. Jeez. And we had 2 days to get back to the airstrip with the sheep on our back, and we couldn't debone it. We were up in the Brooks Range. And so the camera guys were helping carry the meat, and then a bear had eaten all of our food, you know, which we talked about in that video. But it's the hardest things in life. Yeah. It's weird the way God made us. Like, mm-hmm. that's your biggest accomplishment, right? And you don't even know it then, but when you think back and been fortunate to do a lot of hunts, it's like, man, the hardest ones are the ones that you cherish the most.
Totally. Yeah, I can definitely relate to that, man. Yeah, I mean, the easy hunts where you just kind of walk up the mountain and shoot the thing, it's like, that was fun, but yeah, the hard ones where it's like a grind and, like, you know, the last day or whatever, those are the best for sure. This kind of might be a little random turn here, but slightly interested because I just started working with a European brand, tripods, like, okay. Manfrotto tripods. Have you heard of those?
Yes, I have.
Okay, so they just – what's that?
Kurt uses that.
Okay, yeah, so they just launched a hunting and shooting specific tripod line, okay. And I'm helping consult with them, and somehow – they have three consultants, and two of them are European long-range shooters, and one's long-range shooter, one's like a military law enforcement. Somehow, I'm like their only hunting guy. And right. When I was over in Spain, they had me over their facility, amazing facility in Bassano, Italy, and like I spent like basically the whole day like just talking to them about hunting, because most Europeans are like even more removed and like skeptical about hunting than even most Americans, like even like on the left side of the aisle. So that was really interesting, because like a lot, even some of the people on the product team for this hunting and shooting specific product had like very mixed emotions about even doing it. And so I'm curious, like, was there any of that with Marcel, or have you been able to get him on a hunt yet or anything like that?
No, he didn't. I guess because, you know, he's got another company where he does uniforms for the military, right?
Okay.
To some degree, special forces units. But no, that's a great question, because I anticipated that being okay. Europe, right? And that's actually, we tried to get him over for a whitetail hunt last year, and it didn't work out. But here's one thing that I learned, which I thought was fascinating, right? Because you have this dynamic in theory as an umbrella that Europeans have an issue with hunting on a larger scale than maybe in America, right? What I found fascinating was when I went into I was outside of Zurich, and every gas station or shop that I went into had wild game venison jerky.
Hmm. Yeah.
Whether that was stag or roe deer or chamois, whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, that's interesting that I had this preconceived notion that they're largely anti-hunters, except they're eating venison in the regular stores, right?
Yeah.
And so that was, and as I was kind of filling out Marcel, I mean, he's a mountaineer, mountain biker. We went skiing in the backcountry, incredible. And in fact, he took me up. We climbed so high to ski the backcountry that we got above a herd of alpine ibex.
Oh, wow.
And we could watch them. Like the kid was actually the one that saw us first and got some incredible photos and video. He was running through the snow, and mom and dad were bedded in the snow and had no idea we were there. But no, and I think it comes from that. Like what I have noticed there is like hunting is, which is, and it may be part of the problem, Hunter. It's a shame that it is, you have to have a lot of money, because what I understood was like the guys that can hunt ibex, for example, in Austria, Switzerland, they're a part of a club, right? And mm-hmm. if I'm a member, that's my tag every year. And so the only way that you or I are going to get to go hunt an ibex in those countries is to basically offer enough money to buy that guy's tag, or he likes us, right? He wants you to come. He's hunted enough that he wants you to have his tag. And so I think that the lack of access to public hunting grounds is
for sure.
exactly the issue.
I totally agree. I kind of like wanted to learn everything I could about like Spanish and European hunting culture while I was over there. And it made me realize that like the reasons that a lot of Europeans don't like hunting are kind of valid, because their system is set up, for lack of a better word, worse than ours. Like it puts an emphasis on trophy size. It de-emphasizes the importance of the meat, in my experience. And also, like you said, it's kind of the rich guys that can afford, because the bigger the animal is, you know, the more it costs. And, you know, in America, a millionaire and a average Joe can get the same tag, and the average Joe can kill the bigger animal because he's willing to work harder and go deeper or whatever it is, or luck, or, you know, anything. Over there, it's just like the more money you got, the more you're willing to pay, the bigger animal you're going to shoot. And most guys don't even have access to big game hunting at all. So I think, you know, it made me even more grateful for how things are set up over here.
Absolutely. Yeah. When you can get in your truck here in Arkansas and you can drive to Colorado and go hunt an elk, right, with your buddies, you can load up six of you. I know the tag system just changed a bit, but I remember we used to always just go to Colorado and buy over the counter archery tags.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's interesting that somebody in Zurich, Switzerland can walk into a gas station and get a piece of venison for beef jerky or for jerky, right?
Yeah.
And then here we go in and we basically have a choice of three massive name brand companies, and that venison is far more healthy choice than what we're eating. And in theory, Europeans, aren't on board for hunting to the degree we are in America. So it's very interesting.
Yeah. And it was very cool. It was one of the most enjoyable experiences, honestly, of that whole trip, was sitting in a room with like eight Italian people who were like pretty skeptical about hunting and just basically being an ambassador and like, and talking to them about like why hunting is not only important, but good and the more ethical way to consume meat. And anybody who has like, who is willing to at least listen to you and has like half a brain, honestly, if you know how to articulate well and you do it in the right way, they'll end that conversation by being like, okay, yeah, maybe hunting's not so bad. But it speaks to a larger issue of like something I really hope to do in my career, is to really speak to that 80% in the middle. You know, there's always going to be the 10% who are your hunters and the 10% who are sending you death threats every day. But that 80% in the middle who if we represent ourselves well and talk to what hunters could and can and should be, and the actual facts, you can really sway a lot of people's opinions. So, and I think there's a really good opportunity for that within content creation and international hunting and all the stuff we do.
Yeah. You know, you and I could go down this, maybe if we have another podcast sometime or sitting around audit, sure. We get to do the audit hunt, the conservation piece, right? I mean, and I'll tell you, like, I mean, I turned 42 this year. I'm always learning. Like I'm a learner, right? I would self-describe, like, I love to learn. I love to I listen to all opinions, right? And then I'll mm-hmm. form my own. But so as I've gone down this journey of, as you get older and you see more anti-hunters, right? And you hear the talk. When I took my son to Africa, there he is, 6 years old, sitting on the truck. And I've got the tracker that was with us. His name was Charity. And I asked him, you know, Charity, how old are you? And he said, 62. And I said, how long have you been doing this? And he said, I think around, you know, 25, 30 years. And I said, how did you get into hunting? Like, teach me, like, what's that path look like? And he said, oh, well, my family, we were ranchers in Zimbabwe. Mm-hmm. He said, but the leopards and the lions were eating all of our cattle. And so we were killing them by any means possible, poison, right? Yeah. Shooting them, trapping them, snaring them, whatever. And he said, these hunters came to me and said, hey, look, can we, whatever you're making now, we will pay you double what you're making as a rancher if you can stop killing these animals. And he said, you know, what am I going to do? And they said, well, we want you to come hunt with us. We want to protect these animals and we'll bring hunters. And I was like, that was really the first, like, where I'd seen it working on the ground somewhere, unbiased, yeah. Just asked a question. And I was like, wow. Then the light bulb went off in my head. Like, that's incredible. Yeah. So you've now just saved. And obviously there's, again, you could go down this rabbit hole forever. There's the poaching just for meat, for food. Right. But mm-hmm. Yeah, here's a guy who basically said, we were starving because we didn't have any money. We didn't have any cattle because everything was eating our cattle. And so we got offered an alternative to get into hunting and protect these animals, which saves the animals. And yeah. So, and I've seen it in Nepal when we were hunting blue sheep. One of our guides was,
that's a really cool country. I've been there, not to hunt, but one of my favorite places I've ever been. Yeah. I was doing humanitarian disaster relief over there.
Okay.
CBN. But anyway,
awesome. Well, our guide in Nepal had been brought in. His dad, supposedly in this area, in the Dorpatan area, was one of the most infamous hunters or poachers, right, in that area. And so, again, it was like, hey, look, let's protect these animals. We need these animals to survive, and we can offer you an alternative to poaching. And, yeah. And I've seen it, you know, when you see it around the world. And so again, not to go down that rabbit hole, because
no,
we could talk for hours on that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, because I've been to Africa too, on a missions trip. I haven't hunted there yet, but like, I was struck by, like, we did like a road trip from the capital of Uganda to like this tiny village. It was like a 6-7 hour road trip, like through the bush, basically. I did not see one single living animal, like not like a deer on the side of the road, like nothing. And I was like, and then I started to understand, like, wow, like, these animals really, like, only exist where they're hunted, because everywhere else, you know, generations ago, everything was killed and eaten because, you know, a lot of them need food. And yeah. So, yeah, yeah. And not to go, again, not to go down that rabbit hole, but yeah, that's, it's so true, man. So, and it's such an enriching experience to be able to use hunting as a vehicle to travel to these countries, because you see a completely different side that most people go, and they just, you know, you go to Spain, you hang out in Madrid for 3 days. Right. I got to do that, but also like seeing the medium sized towns, the villages, the mountains, like, you just get a whole different experience.
Absolutely. You know, and that's another thing that again, it goes back to, people say, what's your favorite international hunt? Right. I'm like, I was in Nepal about to eat a tag, right? Like, we were down to the last day. Oh, and I'm like, and I'm sitting there, I'll never forget. I stare off into the sunset, and I took my hat off, and I ran my hand through my hair. And I'm like, wow, like, explain to people that we flew around the world, right? Hunted up to 18,000 feet for whatever it was, 12, 14 days. And we're going to get on a plane and go home, right?
Yeah.
But as I looked off into the sunset, I'm like, I can understand that. You know, you can understand that, because I'm like, the things that we've seen going into a remote village in the Himalayas, right? Yeah. Flying past some of the highest peaks in the world in the helicopter. You know, the pilot's wearing oxygen because we're so high. It's just the stuff you see that most people will never see. And as hunters that venture out there, like, we get to see those things.
Yeah. It's a blessing to have lives that are enriched like that. For sure. I definitely don't take it for granted, but, I know we're coming up on time here, man. I've really enjoyed talking to you. What other adventures you got lined out for, besides Africa? And then also, is there anything else new in the works coming out? Do you want to like announce or anything like that? That's completely shot in the dark. I don't know. So
yeah, no, nothing I'll announce. But yeah, we've got some exciting stuff in the works. So I'll share more with you.
Yeah.
When I see you, or you know, if we do this at a later day. But you know, I turn into a whitetail guide in the fall for my kids. So oh, cool. we're gonna go to Africa. We'll be chasing whitetail in October, November, and then hopefully we get to do an audit hunt together, which with you in January.
Oh yeah, I wanted to talk to you about that off air, but
okay,
sweet.
Yeah, that would be and that's a hunt that I do tell people. I've been on one audit hunt out in far west Texas, and man, that's a hunt that I would do with the right group of guys, you know, every year if I could.
It's fun.
It's just the experience, right? And you're just getting to run around out there in the mountains with good guys, and I don't even care if I shoot, right? It's like I just go and help.
And the desert in that time of year is so just pretty, and it's different, especially coming from this like the southeast where it's like basically like jungle half the year. Like going to I just love the desert in January.
I agree. Special place.
Yeah. Well, cool, man. Well, yeah, thanks again. And, I don't know, where can folks go if they want to, see more Canis stuff or that kind of thing?
Yeah. You know, check out, of course, go to our website, canisathlete.com or canisathlete.com, and check out our YouTube channel. A lot of people ask me and, you know, again, cause we're fairly new. A lot of people don't know that I even talk to. I'm like, they're like, man, I'd love to see some of your adventures. I'm like, go to our YouTube channel, go to Canis Athlete on YouTube. I think, Carbon TV, we're on Carbon TV.
Oh, cool.
And you know, we take pride in that. I know Kurt and I are our biggest critics. And I know you know the drill, shooting content. I grew up watching guys like Jim Shockey, and I would always just be curious, like, where's he going? Right? What's out there in the world? And so that's why we film our hunts, obviously to show guys that the gear works, but to be able to show guys, I mean, if you got a choice on where do you want to go hunt, watch our videos.
Yeah.
You know, watch and learn and form your own opinions on what's out there in the world.
Yeah. I feel like at some point in your life, if you have the means, you should do, even if it's just one international hunt, like it's just a different type of experience. I think people should try it.
Absolutely.
Cool. Well,
hey, thanks
again,
dude.
Yeah, man. It was great talking to you. We'll talk to you soon, I hope.
Okay. Thanks. Bye.